This episode is brought to you by Rockstar Energy Drink. Be honest, are you procrastinating by listening to this podcast? It's okay. You just need Rockstar Focus. Choose from three delicious flavors, each crafted with ingredients for an ideal energy and mental boost, like Lion's Mane, 200 milligrams of caffeine, and zero sugar. Visit rockstarenergy.com to learn more. At least 75 milligrams of caffeine has been shown to help improve attention.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
DirecTV Stream has the most local MLB games, which means it's never been easier to
root for the home team.
So whether you're rooting for a aura,
safe,
or even a
strike three,
or a
it's out of here,
root for your home team with DirecTV Stream, the most MLB games, period. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
Double X is brought to you by MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com/XX. Choose from a variety of underwear styles and patterns for both men and women, and they'll be delivered right to your door. For 20% off your first order of the world's most comfortable underwear, head to MeUndies.com/XX right now. And by BowlandBranch.com, the company that makes luxury bedding affordable. Get the nicest sheets you've ever owned for about half the price of what stores and boutiques are charging. Order right now and they'll give you $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping. Go to BowlandBranch.com, that's BowlandBranch.com, and use the promo code XX. And by HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes complete with step-by-step instructions that are designed to take around 30 minutes. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter XX when you subscribe.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to the XX Gabfest for Thursday, January 14th, the Slutty Power Lesbian edition. I'm Hannah Rosen, a host of NPR's Invisibilia. I'm joined in the New York studios by June Thomas, editor of Outward, Slate's LGBTQ blog. Hi, June.
Hey, Hannah.
And Noreen Malone of New York Magazine.
Hi, Hannah.
Welcome back, guys. Happy New Year. It's been a while.
Yeah, happy New Year. Happy 2016.
This time when I texted you guys Happy New Year, you weren't like, what? Who are you?
Wrong number.
Do I even know you? You guys were like normal. So
for the record,
you.
That was June last year.
And for the record, I thought it was a wrong number.
For the record, we do know each other. So
mm-hmm. A little bit.
All right. Well, our three topics, now that we're friends for the new year, are one, David Bowie. Did he pave the way for the gender-bending world we live in now in music, in life? We talked to Leah Delaria, best known as Boo on Orange is the New Black, and also a serious Bowie lover. Hillary and the youth, why don't they love her? Why don't they love her enough? And then finally, adult coloring books. Why are they so popular? All right, let's jump into David Bowie. Where to begin? He was a man who loved his mascara, his pink-tinted feather hair, and all kinds of feminine glamour. We're going to talk to Leah Delaria, who's best known as Boo on Orange is the New Black, and who's recorded an album called House of David, which is a tribute to Bowie. And then we're going to talk about his legacy more broadly. Did he help create this world we live in, where someone like straight Jennifer Lawrence describes her ideal style as slutty power lesbian?
lesbian, where Jaden Smith wears a skirt. Do we live in Bowie land now? Let's start with Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Hannah. It's great to be here.
You obviously love Bowie. We've actually talked about your album because June recommended it. Is it like the music or the iconography that always drew you in? Is it like the changing images of Bowie, what he looked like, what he represented?
Does it have to be one or the other? I mean, it was all of that. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I've said it before. I will say it again. I've said it repeatedly since the horrible news of his death, that he was the first person who taught me as an artist how to just be me as an artist and say fuck you to everyone else. You know what I mean? Like, be true to yourself and your art and what you have to say. And how about, in teenage terms, it's okay to be weird. In fact, it's cool.
Yeah.
And there were definitely, he was such a freak. I mean, I remember growing up in Britain watching Top of the Pops. You know, it's funny, this particular performance has been mentioned in a lot of the press after his death. But I swear I remember watching that during the Ziggy Stardust era, where, you know, he famously appeared in a skin-tight bodysuit with, you know, makeup on his face, with a bright red mullet. And people talked about how seeing that, you know, sitting in the living room with their families, seeing this guy who was really just making so many things be that we thought were established seem actually mutable, how radical that was. And I remember having that feeling, or just, you know, the song Rebel Rebel, the song, you know, that says, what is it? You've got your mother in a whirl. She's not sure if you're a boy or a girl. And I remember, like, that freaked me out because, wow, somebody's saying that out loud. And it's 45 years ago now, and it's really hard to, I think, for people who are younger to realize how radical that was, because it just seems like, well, it's just a line in a song. But that really shook everything potentially apart.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is what I think, that was David always his thing, if you know what I mean. Taking up, he was always two steps ahead of what was happening on the music scene or the fashion scene, which he definitely delved into. I mean, that was all a part of who he was. I mean, we just talked about how he was often in costume. But can I just say this, how cool it was that you got to see that on Top of the Pop?
Yeah.
So cool. I think the American equivalent of that is, for me, you know, my sort of, which is much later, was his appearance on Saturday Night Live singing PVC 15 in a skirt.
These days, wouldn't we just say that was cultural appropriation, like a straight man dressing in gay costume, and people would be pissed at him?
Well, maybe we could say that in these days, but it wasn't these days. I'm sorry, I'm going to go out of left field here a little bit, but I love how people who have become political within the last 5 years, just because they've become old enough to become political, think that this is all, like, they invented all these ideas. These ideas have been around forever, and it's important to know your history, right? So when I say that David Bowie doing what he did in 1960s, 70s, and 80s is so different, because that time is so different than what the time is today. If it wasn't for someone like David Bowie doing what he did, there wouldn't be someone like me.
And I also think that somebody like Bowie, who had such confidence, that I think it's very hard to make that cultural appropriation call of somebody like that. Like, he always seemed like he was owning and he was being himself. He never seemed like he was, even when he was performing gender, and I, you know, Brian Lehrer called him the ultimate drag queen, but just because he was always performing something. It's really hard to criticize people like that, because they are just clearly showing that it's all a performance. And I think that's
absolutely
a really important message.
Yeah, and one of the things that I thought was really interesting, the people in my world who seem to be almost most affected by it were straight men. Like, straight men really love David Bowie.
And thank God!
Right, totally. And I wonder if he just let them sort of explore something in themselves. Like, straight men don't get to explore, like, identity that much. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's a very rigid thing that they're stuck in. And I wonder if, like, on some level, they wish they could be, you know, Ziggy Stardust. Mm-hmm.
Leah Lesher, you released an album called House of David, the covers of Bowie songs. Is there one that you'll be sort of singing with it even more emotion now that he's gone?
Probably Life on Mars I'll be singing more than any. The reason why that is, I just kind of like to think that he's on Mars.
All right.
Well, thank you, Leah, for joining us. It was really great to have you. And
can I just say before you knock me off that David Bowie was a legend and a hero and a rock god and probably the first artist to ever teach me to be who I am on stage and present people with what I think is right. And fuck them. And, seriously, I think that's what he did his whole life. And I think there's a lot of us out there, especially those of us who explore gender and sexual identity, that feel this way about him. And I think this is a great loss. It's still, I'm still trying to work through it. It's crazy.
Thank you, Leah.
All right, ladies, thanks for having me.
So that was Leah Delaria. Her album is called House of David, which is a tribute to Bowie, a jazz tribute to Bowie. Okay, if we accept that David Bowie was out there in the mainstream helping to break down gender barriers, you could be a boy, you could be a girl, your parents can't even figure it out. It kind of sounds in some ways like the world that we live in now, a world in which, for example, Jennifer Lawrence, who is totally mainstream, says that she defines her style as slutty power lesbian, even though she's not a lesbian, as far as we know, just as David Bowie was not gay, as he said many times. So, June, besides you, who and what is a slutty power lesbian?
Slutty power lesbian. Well, generally a skinny woman who likes to wear tuxedo jackets with no shirt underneath. I'm thinking Jennifer Beals in The L Word, thinking Marissa Tomei in Empire. But as Christina Cotterucci noted in a great piece on Slate, it could also be like ripped Carhartts and Keens. It could be.
What are Carhartts and what are Keens?
So Keens are those weird shoes that have a big plastic toe. I much prefer them to Birkenstocks.
Okay.
And Carhartts are, it's clothing that's meant for like workwear.
Carhartts are like if you go to like a ranch.
Yeah.
They're sort of long. It's like an old American ranching farming company. So ranchers and farmers will be wearing Carhartt jeans or Carhartt jackets.
Got it.
But there also is, I think, one of the things that you'll notice about those people I noted, they're not actually gay. They play gay on TV, some of them. But I think there is, it's an attitude, and I think that is the connection with Bowie, that Bowie always had that, you know, whatever. He could be whatever. He had Bowie confidence. And I think the slutty power lesbian that J-Law was referring to is just that sort of like utter confidence that, yes, she's a Dior ambassador and she always wears Dior, but inside she's got that edgy kind of confidence.
Yeah, I was thinking about what it meant to dress as a slutty power lesbian. And to me, it means like removing, you know, the quote unquote male gaze, right? You're not sort of, in her case, probably dressing for herself, like what she finds sexy in herself. But you're not, like, there's just certain ways that straight women often unconsciously sort of feminize their appearance just because, you know, on some level that a man will like it, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, a slutty power lesbian is, you know, you're like, nah, I'm not going to belt that. I don't care if my waist is nipped in here or whatever, you know?
Right.
So it's like sexy for yourself. It's like sexy. It's sexy, but not, it's a way of preserving your right to be sexy without.
Or it's like the power part is key. I think, like as a straight woman, dressing for power is kind of difficult because generally, I think men don't find women who are more powerful than them attractive. I think there are plenty of studies done to that effect. And so, slutty power lesbian, you're saying, yeah, I want to wear, like, you know, anything that makes me look like I, you know, am the queen of the world or whatever.
Right. Yes, queen.
Yes, queen.
Well, what I found confusing is, like, now, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't say this in the Bowie part, but Bowie and even more Mick Jagger, who's like a few years older than Bowie, the kind of transgressiveness was just pure sexy to me in a way that, say, like Brooke Shields and Blue Lagoon just seemed cheesy. Like, regular sexy was inaccessible to me as a teenager because it seemed lame and cheesy, right? Like, that's for other people. That's just lame. Whereas those guys were just so sexy. And then I thought, oh, well, now we've kind of lost that sense. It's like entered the politics, it's entered the mainstream because of gay marriage. And so it doesn't have that same kind of edgy, transgressive, sexy. But maybe it does. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe slutty power lesbian is just more sexy than slutty power straight girl.
I think it's in the mainstream, but it still feels like when someone wants to reach for, you know, a whiff of the avant-garde or a whiff of just like being cooler than the situation they're in. So like Kanye West has totally reformed his image by sort of wearing slightly agender clothing. You know, it's got a bit of that. It's not glam in the way that Bowie was, but it's sort of more androgynous. Or if you look at, you know, Jaden Smith, who is the teenage son of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith, he has sort of cemented his place as cool by wearing, you know, like happily wearing women's clothes and or wearing dresses, not calling them women's clothes. Like he's the face of a women's clothing line. You know, I think there is still, yes, it's more in the mainstream, but there is still something where you're signaling, hey, I'm a little bit different. I'm a little bit, I'm not coming at you from a right angle. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly that whole thing of like, you don't care. I guess that's what it is. You don't care what people call you. You still are, if you want to dance, you're going to dance. And it doesn't matter if you look whatever, you know, put your adjective here that isn't considered necessarily, you know, all that fantastic by some people. You just don't care what people think. And that's what makes you so exciting. And I think there aren't that many people who have that because there is a lot of judgment and there is a lot of, you know, a lot of poo-pooing that you just have. There's a lot to not care about, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are still people out there that you, but now I think you have to be really different to stand out. I mean, there's just much more acceptance. It's harder to be weird these days, I think.
Yeah, it was Prince. I was wondering if Prince was the last one who felt that way, like the last one whose gender bending felt really out there and transgressive.
It's interesting that both Prince and David Bowie, like, ultimately were straight men, right? Like, that it's more transgressive to play with gender as a straight man, I think,
right,
than anything else.
Well, that reminded me of the conversation we had with Brian Lauder in the series he did in Slate, where there's a difference between homosexual and gay, ever more so as being homosexual becomes much more mainstream. You can separate gay, and so you can be straight and be gay. Like David Bowie was more gay than maybe, you know, many homosexuals.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And he clearly enjoyed the gay scene. He just wasn't particularly into gay sex.
Right. And that's all right now, right? Mm-hmm, that's its whole other category.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we've made it all right for David Bowie.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Now let's move on to our second topic, Hillary and the ungrateful youth. But before we do that, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Would you like to know the secret of New Year's resolutions? You have to make the first step easy. So the first thing you do every day is what? Put on underwear. This year, out with the old, in with the new. Step into a fresh pair of MeUndies, the world's most comfortable underwear, and it's the easiest resolution you'll make. Head to MeUndies.com, that's MeUndies.com. Choose from a variety of styles in limited edition patterns, both for men and women, and they'll be delivered right to your door. So you can always make it clear that you have the most limited edition hard-to-get undies from MeUndies.com. MeUndies is the next level of underwear. Every pair is made with their signature modal fabric, proved to be twice as soft as cotton. They don't just feel better than regular undies, they make you feel invincible. And it's guaranteed to be the most comfortable underwear you've ever worn, or your first pair is free. So don't start your new year in old underwear. Make a change and head to MeUndies.com/XX right now and get 20% off your first order. Plus, shipping is always free for all orders in the US and Canada. So for 20% off your first order of the world's most comfortable underwear, head to MeUndies.com/XX right now.
All right. So Hillary, she's trying. She's trying hard lately on the campaign trail where she's running neck and neck with Bernie Sanders in Iowa. But she's also trying to reach out to the youth. She did a selfie with Kim and Kanye. She invited Lena Dunham to Iowa. And then after all that, here's what a 19-year-old woman says in The New York Times. She says, a woman will be elected president pretty soon anyway, regardless of what happens in 2016. So why does that woman have to be Mrs. Clinton? So what do they want from her? Like, why can't the youth get behind Hillary Clinton?
Well, the youth want
Tell us what the youth want, Maureen.
The youth want Bernie is what they want. They want a 70-something, like, grumpy old man who doesn't really seem to care about connecting with them. I think what young people seem to want in this election is they're very concerned with the economy. They're very concerned with criminal justice reform. They're very concerned with civil rights action. They are not interested in, like, relitigating the 90s, and they don't just and even Hillary's attempts to sort of talk about what they want don't seem to be connecting.
Maybe you're right, is that the problem is that she actually stands for governance. I mean, there's all sorts of cultural arguments we can make, lots and lots of them. But the policy arguments, like the thing that she is someone who can competently govern. And that's not that exciting a thing to the youth. Like, no matter what, how you paint that up, they want some, you know, I don't know. They just want, they like protest. Well, limited protest, safe protest.
That's the thing that's so hard to understand of, well, I guess, why they're not feeling the hill. Mm-hmm. But why are they feeling the burn? I mean, he has been in government for a long time.
I know. There was some 17-year-old quoted in one of these articles who was like, I want something fresh, you know. She feels like she's a Washington insider. This Bernie Sanders, though, he's a real outsider. And it's like Bernie Sanders just like lives there in Washington.
But they don't know that. So right. It's like you don't want like your mom. Hillary's like a hand-me-down. And Bernie Sanders he's at least new on the national stage. So they feel like they discovered him. I have kind of a theory that's unflattering to the youth. You know how the youth like to protest these days in kind of a limited way? Like, they like to protest, but they say, like, I want the administration to fix all the problems. They don't burn the house down. It's not like a burn the house down kind of spirit in the youth revolution. So Bernie is like, I want someone who's kind of a renegade, but also my grandpa. Like, it's a safe kind of protest, you know?
Yeah, I think that's nice. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm going to take that as a compliment for the youth. What I think it is, it's funny. I am so horrified by all the pandering that Hillary has done to the youth vote. Like, I find it very painful when her account, like, tweets, yes, queen, and, like, you know, she's going to go on Broad City. Like, it's just, it makes my shoulders crunch up, and I'm just, like, I'm so embarrassed on behalf of her. And it's not that I don't think Hillary is cool. Like, reading all those emails, you get a sense of, like, who Hillary is. She does, you know, use slang sometimes. She does consume pop culture. She loves The Good Wife, which is hilarious. But, like, the forced march towards, like, being a millennial-friendly brand is just horrible. And I think it is. It's like,
I never thought of it as a millennial-friendly brand. That's
it is
horrible.
Like, what? Why else do you think they're tweeting "Yes, Queen" and like selfies with Kim and Kanye? That is not because she wants to. That is not like I hate to bring up.
That's really presidential.
No, I hate to bring up the A word, authenticity, because that, you know, is such a trope about Hillary. But it does feel. People can sense when they're being pandered to, right? And I think that's part of what is appealing about Bernie as opposed to Hillary, like just on a sheer sort of messaging way. Like, I think young people find
it... You mean what? He doesn't care. He so is who he's never going to tweet about you. Probably doesn't even tweet. I don't even know.
Well, it's sort of insulting to assume that you can, you know, win over young people with a, like... at this point somewhat tired internet catchphrase. It sort of says, okay, you young people don't really care about the issues. And in fact, the support for Bernie suggests that people very earnestly care about the issues because that is all Bernie is talking about. He is not doing small talk. He is not trying to, you know, kiss any babies. He's just going straight for, like, very serious policy discussions.
Did you guys read Hillary's interview in Lenny with Lena Dunham?
No, I did not.
I did when it came out, but not recently.
It's just what you were saying about millennial branding reminded me of it because it kind of tips back and forth. It was actually quite a good interview and had all these pictures of Hillary. Because if you think about Hillary in her 20s was Bernie, you know, like all the pictures of her, she was like a serious radical. And all the pictures of her make her totally millennial friendly. So I think Lena Dunham was trying to bring forth that side of her. But then there's this strained back and forth, like Lena Dunham or whoever did the interview says, hey, I read that you worked at a salmon cannery in Alaska, you know, trying to make her completely relatable to the youth who are just kind of drifting around in their 20s. And then her answers are like partly really strained. I don't trust anyone who says they didn't have some questions in their 20s. And then she tries to talk about the salmon and her pair of hip boots and a spoon. You know what I mean? Like, you can see the mechanics working. It never kind of just lands in a gentle, natural place.
I think the part of it is just that there's, we're so used to, in fact, it's kind of, it's the way the campaigns are structured, is are to appeal, and thus, if you want to say it, to pander to certain demographics, like to older people, because we know, or we keep hearing, that they vote much more than other groups, and therefore you keep giving stuff to them. You know, we're used to pandering or politicians pitching themselves to certain groups, and we're not used to them doing it to young people. And so I think it's just, you know, most politicians are older, especially this cycle. And I think it just seems we're not used to it. So I think there's a little bit of, oh, what's going on here, in a way that they're doing it to other groups just as much. It's just we're more used to that.
So the latest line in all of this has been a feminist debate about Hillary's role in covering up Bill's infidelities. Now, that's not new. People have talked about this before. Do you guys think that's fair game, below the belt? Do you have any views about that?
Well, I think in a presidential election, sort of everything is on the table, inevitably, whether we want it to be or not. Like, just as a woman, I do feel for Hillary. Like, that is awful, you know? And for us to sit here in judgment of, you know, what goes on in another person's marriage is kind of awful. On the other hand, it's a political marriage, you know, two for the price of one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's on the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's part and parcel of her being from this, you know, name brand family that we're all so familiar with. We all, every single person in America, in my view, maybe I'm wrong about that, knows that Bill Clinton was president, that he had affairs, that she's his wife, and that therefore she sort of dealt with these affairs. It's just part of her biography, and it's a really big part of her biography.
I don't think it's any of that. I don't really care whether she had affairs and what she did about the affairs, or whether she... It's how she actually actively behaved in regards to these women that I feel like is fair game. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's kind of, you know, it's old news, but how she kind of created this counter-narrative of the right-wing conspiracy, which justified all her total public crushing of Paul Jones and Monica Lewinsky, like, that is what I feel she needs to account for. It doesn't mean that we, you know, it's not a deal breaker, but that is something she did wrong during that period.
Although I think that she can get away with doing anything in that circumstance, because that is where she stops being Hillary Clinton, the politician, the former senator, the former secretary of state, the former first lady, and just becomes a woman whose husband cheated.
Yeah.
But then you stay quiet. You don't
talk. No, but you can get away with anything because you're hurt. Like, that's the thing, that you can, that's the one time where you can be unpresidential, because you want to lash out because you're just hurt. You're stinging. And what do you do in those circumstances? You lash out too. So in a way, I think she can get away with anything in that regard.
And I do think it's pretty hard to expect a woman to have a ton of empathy for a woman who slept with her husband. Now, that's not to say she shouldn't strive to have it, but just think about that scenario. Like, really burrow down and think about if you would really be like, well, Monica Lewinsky was young and Bill really took advantage of her. Like, on some level, she knows that, but it's also like, you know, a 21-year-old who slept with her husband.
Yeah, and maybe it's like you use the tools available to you. So if you're a private citizen, let's say in a small community, the equivalent of what Hillary did would be to spread nasty rumors about the woman, or just like bond with other people over what a bitch this other woman was. But in this case, you've got bigger guns.
What do you guys think about this sort of resurfacing of, you know, even worse claims about Bill Clinton, you know, the Juanita Broderick rape accusations that are resurfacing?
I mean, it's out there.
It's out there. I think it's going to be a bigger issue than the Monica stuff, actually.
Yeah, but have they come up with anything yet? I mean, that is so far trick. That is a retread of the 90s, and that it's all coming out of the right wing. It's not like I haven't seen, you know, mainstream newspapers start to dig back into Juanita Broderick and go back over that evidence. And maybe it's because I recently read David Brock that the whole thing seems totally jerry-rigged, which is what he says in his books.
Well, because I wrote about Bill Cosby, I get emails from people on a fairly regular basis saying, you know, why aren't you digging into Bill Clinton's history as a rapist? And these are sort of anonymous internet email addresses, but there are a lot of people out there who want people at mainstream newspapers and who want feminist writers to resurface this. Like, there is actively a campaign for that. We are in a moment where people are taking stock of, you know, some horrible things that powerful men have done. And so there's this moment where sort of, you know, feminist beliefs and maybe this right-wing conspiracy or whatever right. you want to call it.
The vast right-wing conspiracy.
Yeah, might have a Venn diagram, which I don't know. I think it's going to be a little bit of an issue, I bet.
It's hard to see. Yeah, it's hard to see, though, how it affects her. I mean, I guess if it's there's a general sort of disdain and much worse for the Clinton family or the Clinton name, but how does that do anything to Hillary per se?
You need a two-step thing. So you'd need one, you'd need reporting that he did rape her and you or someone, and that you need a second set of reporting that Hillary knew or could have known or should have known. So in that sense, I think it does affect her. Although it's not like Bill Cosby's wife spent a lot of time in the limelight, like people wondered, but didn't really go too hard on that one. But Noreen, it does make me wonder if it's probably likely true that Cosby wasn't the only one and that there were powerful men who must have operated with impunity in the same just kind of outlandish way he did during those two decades.
Well, you yeah. see this in Britain all the time. I mean, nowadays, you look at the British news, it's like some people, you know, some famous guy from the 70s, sometimes the 80s, accused and, you know, with evidence of doing horrible things just because, I mean, it sounds impossible to say it now, but like the standards were different. You could do grotesque, horrible things if you were a famous man. And he was a pretty famous man.
Well, in a weird way, this makes me think of Debbie Wasserman Schultz's comment in the New York Times Magazine that young women now are complacent. She was saying this in reference to women not supporting Hillary. But, you know, she was saying, you see this, basically, you see this changed world. You think it's always been like this. You think it will always be like this, you know. Don't assume that, essentially. And that rubbed me the wrong way. I think you can accuse young women of being a lot of things, probably, but I don't think complacent is one of them. And I also don't think that, you know, just because you support Bernie instead of Hillary, that makes you complacent. I don't think that, you know, it is your duty necessarily as a woman to be a single issue voter and have that single issue be the gender of the candidate, which to me seemed to be the logical extension of what she was saying.
Although, you know, the thing that you started the segment with, Hannah, when you talked about that young woman saying something like, you know, there'll be a woman at some point. It doesn't have to be Hillary. Like, that does make me crazy. Like, yeah, absolutely, Noreen. What you just said is absolutely right. However, like, which woman is it going to be? You know,
President Nikki Haley. Get excited.
It's all, like, I can't help but notice that, the you know, everybody takes their turn until it's the woman's turn. And then somehow then there's always some other like, well, you know, I don't want to just follow in that pattern now. It irritates me.
Yeah, I wonder if that's generational. And I wonder which generation is right. Like, sometimes I think, oh, well, there are some women in the pipeline. There's more women than there used to be in the pipeline. Some of them are Republicans, but there are some, you know, but not that many. So I'm not sure which way it goes. Like, Hillary doesn't become president. Does it all just revert back to zero? Or do you feel like Kirsten Gillibrand, Nikki Haley, like more women start coming up?
Obama, I think Kirsten Gillibrand is on her way up. Also, Obama wasn't really in the pipeline for that long. He was in the pipeline starting in what, like 2006? You know, that was a pretty fast shoot down the pipe.
But there are not actually a lot of African-American politicians in the pipeline. It is actually, it is different. It's not necessarily equivalent. You know, one has the sense culturally that if Hillary becomes president, then, that you know, women are in the game.
Why is that? I am not sure I entirely follow the logic on that.
I think because of the because there's more racism than there is sexism, and there's more economic inequality and opportunity inequality for Black Americans than for women. And there's a lot of misogyny and other terrible things going on, but I think there's this sort of broad acceptance that a woman could be president, even if, you know, it's still a little theoretical.
I just enjoy looking into the future and seeing President Lena Dunham and thinking, you know, maybe she needs to be the first one. Which, you know, as silly as that sounds, there obviously you just need to look at the race this year and see that people are not that attracted to politicians anymore, which is moronic. It's the biggest dumb thing that happens in politics. I want a politician to be running politics. Thank you.
Yeah, but, I do too. Can we just pause and take a moment to compliment Lena Dunham's stumping look? She recently went on a multi-city tour in support of Hillary Clinton. And she wore, you know, politicians do not dress in an interesting way. You sort of wear your red suit, your red pantsuit. You know, Hillary Clinton in particular gets tagged for wearing the same thing over and over again, which I would too if I were in her situation. But Lena Dunham wore, like, I'm going to describe these wrong, but they were all sort of red, white, and blue themed. One dress had, like, Hillary written all over it in graphic letters. Another was, like, stars and stripes. She was not trying to do the subtle politician thing. And it was pretty fun, I thought.
I would totally wear that Hillary Clinton jumper.
I will pay to see that.
I was kind of into that, like, it's either like a pimp thing or like a circus performer thing. It's like the vote for Hillary with the sequins and the stripy pants. You know which one I'm talking about? With, like,
no,
sequins all over it. It was pretty amazing. I bet that Hillary block dress becomes a thing.
I bet it does too, yeah. Actually.
That was hot.
All right, so President Lena Dunham. June, you can start the Tumblr, okay?
Done.
Okay, let's move on to our next topic, adult coloring books. But before we do that, let's thank our next sponsor.
This week, the XX Gabfest is sponsored by Bowl & Branch. So I want to thank Bowl & Branch for sending all of us these really pretty gray, very warm, light scarves as a nice holiday present. It's very, very cold in New York today, but and with, like, wind chill of, you know, crazy, insane Des Moines temperatures. But I was plenty warm walking from the subway, swaddled in my beautiful Bowl & Branch scarf. And not only do they make scarves, in fact, they are better known for sheets. And the best thing that you can do to have a good day, other than wear a warm scarf, is to get a good night's sleep the night before. And Bowl & Branch has set out to make this possible. They've reinvented sheets and bedding with the sole purpose of making your nights more comfortable than ever. And they really specialize in very, very soft bedding, which that's my favorite kind of sheet to sleep on, personally. And you can only get these products at one place, bowlandbranch.com, where you know you're paying for quality sheets and not department store overhead. And I will say that sheets are, like, one of the most overpriced things. You know, you set out to buy new sheets and you're sort of stunned by how much they cost. So for just a couple $100, you can get amazingly luxurious sheets. Just go online to bowl, that's B-O-L-L, and branch.com. And the great thing is, this is unprecedented. They'll let you try them risk-free for 30 nights. Plus, as a XX Gabfest listener, you can get 20% off your entire order and free shipping. And they all come to your house beautifully packaged in signature boxes. So bowlandbranch.com today for 20% off your entire order. And use the promo code XX, that's D-O-U-B-L-E-X, at bowlandbranch.com.
All right, let's move on to our next topic, adult coloring books. They are so popular. I actually bought several for friends for Christmas, all from that Animal Kingdom series. Is this because we're deprived of play or just because we can't sit still anymore? So this is as close as we get to meditating and doing nothing. Is it about art therapy? I am puzzling over this. Have either of you guys ever used an adult coloring book?
Yeah. I'm a coloring book user for many years, but I've kind of stopped using them now that they've gotten popular because...
Whoa, many years. Yeah. Tell me more.
Well, you've always been able to get coloring books. I remember having Dover ones for ages that were super cheap. And now apparently they sold like 5.5 million last year, but they've always been available.
How did you get into it and why did you get into it?
I like art supplies, and it's like it gives you a chance to use your art supplies, and it, you know, it's kind of fun. And one of the things that is merely my guess, but I feel that I've got more of a sort of demand for it these days because we're all so used to multitasking that even if I'm watching television, even a show that I'm liking, I'm often doing something else. And it's generally like playing a game on my phone or looking at Twitter. And it feels a little more respectful to the television show or the movie to be coloring rather than, you know, playing Candy Crush. But yeah, I've also been aware of like write-on ones for a number of years. But I want to know, Hannah, are you a colorer?
No, and I've been thinking about it. So I looked at Johanna Basford, who's the one who makes the beautiful Animal Kingdom ones, which I think are so beautiful. And like she has actually posted, I don't think it's her Instagram, maybe it's a Tumblr. Anyway, of ones that people have sent her in, and
they're fully
so.
Com-
completed. Fully completed. Like, yeah. People will just, like, send her a picture of a page, mm-hmm. and they're unbelievably beautiful. And it made me feel like maybe what this is about, I mean, I'm sure it's about everything that you say, but maybe it's like, you know how in Japan there's kind of a universal, minimal, accessible creativity? Like, at a certain age, everybody will take a flower arranging class. It's just, like, kind of part of the culture. Maybe this is a way of creating accessible, you know, craft or something, or accessible art, accessible creativity. I don't know. I haven't done them because I'm really impatient, but I actually was thinking of doing it in the same way that you said, June. Like, maybe when I'm fidgety, I can do that mm-hmm. instead of doing the kind of pellet, the reward pellet checking of email, which, you know, yields nothing as you're sitting there in the evening. Maybe it will calm that instinct down.
So I find them very depressing.
Oh.
Just as a concept. I'm sure I would actually love it if I did it. But, okay, so it's a stress reliever, I guess. You know, have your extremely stressful day where you're checking a lot of boxes, you're doing a million things, and you literally, to unwind, go home and color inside the lines. Like, that is what you are doing to relieve your type A self. Like, that bums me out. And Why?
Because of the in the lines
thing?
Yeah,
because, okay, I think all human beings are creative, and I do think that adults don't unlock that creativity enough. I certainly don't. But, you know, like, you graduate from coloring books, right, to freeform drawing, and you don't have to do art. You can do other things. But, like, to me, there's something about following someone else's instructions after probably having followed someone's instructions all day in a number of places, you know, at work, at, you know, in your gym class, you know, as you're cooking a recipe, all you're doing is following other people's instructions. And to me, the thing that's missing in an adult life is not the chance for meditation. It's the chance to sort of, like, go deep into, like, your childlike spirit where you're like, you know, what color this woman's going to be? Purple. And you're just going for it. I don't know. It just, and again, I'm sure I'd love it. It's beautiful. I don't mean to put down anyone who finds solace or pleasure in it. It just bums me out that this is where we've gone.
It's funny, though, because I think I know exactly what you mean, but I think that there's a lot of stress around that kind of free form creativity that you're talking about. Like, I love to do all kinds of arty things, but it's a challenge to sit down there at the end of a long day. And these days, the days are longer and longer. And then have to create something. You put a lot of stress on yourself. And I think that just, and you know, you don't have to do things in any particular color. It's not color by numbers. You can, you know, you can make the faces purple if you want.
Sure.
And I think it just maybe kind of eases you into that kind of things. You know, it gets you using your art supplies. And then I suspect a lot of people then go, you know what, this is really nice, but I think I could do something. And there's one thing I want to mention, which is there can be, I don't think there particularly is with the Joanna Basford types, but there can be a kind of an educational element. So one of the first coloring books that I remember is T. Corinne's Cunt Coloring Book.
And what were you coloring in there, June? Was it an array of peaches and pink?
There's only one thing in that book. There's more than, I think there's like more than three dozen cunts of various sizes and types. But that is like, it was an educational project. You know, it was part of that whole Our Bodies, Ourselves era, you know, learn about your body, learn about anatomy, you know, take control of your life in a way. And then there were others, like, I know in our house we have an anatomy coloring book, which my girlfriend sometimes pulls out when I'm like revealing some huge ignorance about the human body, which again is like, it really was a study aid. But if you maybe color in all the metatarsals, you remember how the bones connect to each other. You know, there's a long kind of history of this kind of thing, of you sort of spend some time really looking at something and it just kind of helps you make a connection to it. Maybe would you be more interested in coloring in the human body, Hannah?
Coloring in the human body. You know, in preparing for this topic, the thing I loved most was reading this New Republic story of the radical history of 60s coloring books. Mm-hmm. It's like the opposite spirit of what Noreen is saying. There were these plain kind of organization man coloring books that included all this protest. I guess they were like proto-graphic novels for everybody. Not proto-graphic novels, but just they felt more like you were creating something transgressive, you know, whereas now it's very pretty and decorative.
they had like captions that were like, better color in this man's suit gray or else he's going to get fired. You know?
It was like exactly what Noreen was saying. It was like channeling the spirit of Noreen.
So I was thinking a little bit about, you know, play in my own life and the degree to which I have it and not, and where you get that. And I was also thinking about the gender breakdown of this, because one of the places in my life that is just sheerly for fun, I don't feel like I'm accomplishing anything. Like when I cook, I feel like I'm accomplishing something. When I go to yoga, I feel like I'm accomplishing something. You know, all these things that bring me joy on some level, I can justify spending the time to myself because it feels like I'm moving in a positive direction. But I play on a couple like rec sports teams, mostly with men, by the way. And that is just sheerly like, in some ways, a waste of 2 hours, except it's a very sort of joyful, you know, friendship-filled, running around kind of experience. So that's one place. I also think men, and again, painting with a broad brush here, but I don't think men feel the same pressure to have their leisure activities accomplish something. Like, I know a lot more men than women who play video games. That's not to say women don't, of course, but that you can't really tell yourself unless you're like a surgeon or, you know, a drone strike person. You can't really tell yourself you're training for anything when you play video games. And I don't think men feel guilt over that. Whereas, you know, if you knit or if you sew or even if you do ceramics, like you're building something. And I wonder if there is something sort of deeply gendered about like allowing yourself to just fuck around as an adult if it comes more easily to men than to women.
That's so depressing.
Well, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me what you do in your life that's just
No, just as you were talking, I was feeling the pain of self-recognition, and I just want to vomit. Like, that's just horrible. Like, how David sits and watches sports, like, you know, for a few hours, whatever, every night on Sunday, and I just feel, I don't feel judgy about it, but I feel like that kind of thing is not accessible to me.
But you watch TV.
I know, but then we turn it into, even June will be like, oh, I watch so much TV. But then that's also part of your job,
yeah.
June. Like, what if you didn't get to write about it at all and you didn't get to talk about it with us or with anyone at Slate at all? Would you have a different feeling about sitting around and watching TV?
I think I would watch even more. I mean, I just love it. Then I wouldn't have to write about it and make notes or like have to watch certain shows. I think, I think I would still watch it. You know, I listen to a bunch of podcasts about pens and pencils. And
as we all
a
do.
A bunch.
Multiples.
There are several. And
can you name check them?
Sure. The Pen Addict, Erasable, Anderson Pens, Radio Network. And I can't believe the way I'm being judged right now. But anyway.
Oh, my God. We never apologized for how we judged you about the.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
all right.
We should talk about that.
That's all right.
Yeah, because we just did it again.
We should explain what we're referring to. June trying to have a very serious minded discussion of, what is it, British politics?
Oh, my God. Already it's starting. British and Canadian.
British and Canadian.
And we were listeners found us very dismissive, which is true, and I'm sorry, June. If you would like to tell us all about the political situation in Britain, I'm ready to learn.
Here's what I think that was all about. It was nothing to do with politics of Britain and Canada. It's because you all know that I'm an only child, and you were using multi-child tactics on me. That's exactly what happened. You know it is.
Probably, actually.
Because I don't know how to handle it. I have no, in my long life, I have no experience of like when your siblings do that, like sibling kidding. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? No, stop! Anyway, what was he talking about? Anyway, on the Pen Addict podcast, they've been talking a lot about grown-up coloring books. And these dudes, you know, one I think in his late 30s, one in his 20s, have talked about buying pens and doing the coloring. And it has been interesting because I think they have to sort of justify it a little bit more because it's not very dudely. But I think they both have talked about enjoying it. But one of them then found an app for his iPad and liked the colouring on his iPad even more, which felt like, yeah, that's what a guy would do. He'd find some app that he could do, you know, he'd find some tools or some gear that he could use. Whereas I just use a magic pencil, so I don't even have to keep changing the pencil. You know those pencils that have lots of different colours in one?
No.
You guys.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
But so those are good because then you don't have to keep changing pens. I can't be arsed with that.
Okay, so let's just make a resolution. Noreen, is there anything sports is it for you? Like, can we agree that play is good?
Play
at
is
least?
Good. And listeners should write in and tell us all the many ways that women play that I did not list there, because I'm being very narrow-minded, I'm sure.
Actually, I would deeply appreciate that. If I could just get a wave of people saying, this is fun and you should do it and chill out, I would really appreciate that. Okay, so let's move on to our recommendations. But before we do that, let us thank our final sponsor.
Our final sponsor this week is HelloFresh, a meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. They source the freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. There's also, unlike some other delivery services, there's not a lot of wasted packaging with HelloFresh. And to top it all off, every meal kit is delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. I was very impressed with the packaging. There, you get a little worried when you think, oh, there's chicken or there's pork in that box. But they are very, very well insulated and refrigerated. The way that this works is that HelloFresh offers customers a classic box or a veggie box. And they'll be launching a family box soon. So you get to pick the recipes that you think that your family will enjoy, that you would like to make. And then they come with the ingredients, all in the case of the vegetables, either provided and you get instructions how you should chop them, or some of them, like squashes, are already cut up. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code XX when you subscribe.
All right, so let's move on to our recommendations. Noreen, what do you have for us today?
I recently read The Secret History by Donna Tartt. And, you know, for years people had said, oh, you got to read The Secret History, you know, like The Goldfinch. Especially when The Goldfinch came out, people were like, yeah, this was pretty good, but remember The Secret History. And I thought The Goldfinch was okay. And this was phenomenal. I was so absorbed in this book. It's about students who study Greek at a thinly disguised Bennington College in Vermont. And I'm not spoiling anything by saying that they murder one of their classmates, because that is literally on the first page of the book. And then it's sort of a remarkable psychological thriller unspooling that I was totally into. And it's written so much better than The Goldfinch. It retroactively bummed me out that The Goldfinch wasn't better. But if you haven't yet read it, believe what everyone says.
That's great. I might reread that. It's been a long, long time, and I'm kind of novel short right now. Okay, well, I have a couple of things, both of which are pretty well known, but again, both of which I loved over the break, especially Making a Murderer. I have not yet listened to the Culture Gap Fest. I'm so delighted that they did a segment about it this week, because I sit and watch it by myself. David has no interest. I don't have any friends for some reason who watch it or have made it past the first episode and a half. So I'm just like drooling and like, oh my God, did you see that? And nobody's answering. So I love it. And I think it's unbelievable feat of reporting. So that's amazing. And the second thing is, I'm sorry to do this, but it is a cleanse that I am following.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay, Gwyneth.
Yeah, exactly. Hannah Gwyneth Rosen here. But it's Sarah Dickerman's Food Lovers Cleanse and Bon Appetit, which is a different category of cleanse. This is the sixth year, but the only year in which I've done it seriously, like I cook all the recipes every week. It's made me so happy. Not because of the cleanse part, because it got me out of a cooking rut. So like when you follow something for 2 weeks, you just do it systematically. Like I'm afraid to cook fish. And so now I have been cooking fish because that's what's on the menu for Monday and Wednesday. And it's so much fun. Like, I eat the same breakfast every day. And now I have this whole repertoire of fabulous breakfasts. I just have to say it's made me hugely, hugely happy. And I bought her cookbook, which just came out this month. And so so now I can do it for a while. And I love it.
I have that in my Amazon cart. I really want to buy it.
And I get it for Christmas. Sarah was a contributor to Slate for many years and is a great friend of the magazine and of me. And so, yeah, that's I'm really looking forward to getting into it myself, too.
Yeah, I totally did it full on, and I have been loving it. Anyway, June.
So I have two, I guess, British recommendations, I'm just realizing. So Two Man Bay is this really fantastic BBC drama series. As of this week, there will be 7 episodes. It's like 45-minute sort of audio drama. It's an ongoing series about a vast empire threatened by a slave revolt. It was inspired by the Mamluk slave dynasty of Egypt, and there's new episodes every Wednesday. It's kind of a little bit of that classic radio play stuff with like lots of sound effects, but I think it's really good and I'm really, really into it. And we all need a new audio obsession now that Serial's not that good in season two and is also going bi-weekly. And then the other thing, next week on BBC America, there's a new series beginning called London Spy. It's a very different kind of espionage show. And it's really, I would say, about a gay man who's essentially been thrown away by society, who it's really about him finding his way and finding his talents, discovering his talents through tragedy. And it's the lead character is played by Ben Whishaw, and it is amazing. I have to admit, there's not a lot of women in it, but Charlotte Rampling is there. And, you know, a little bit of Charlotte Rampling goes a long way because she's so fantastic. But I think it's a really, really fascinating series.
Always learn new television from June. Always refreshing my television knowledge. Thank you.
I sort of think that June started the American mania for the Great British... What is that?
Great British... Yeah. Well, in England, in America, it's Great British Baking Show.
Yeah, I think you're patient zero. That's my theory.
Could be.
It's possible. My little son got that cookbook, and he just reads it at night every night.
Oh, my
just,
God.
Like, looks over
That's
the recipes.
Amazing.
Pours over them, remembers the various characters. It's like he likes sports and the Great British Baking Show.
Oh,
those are his
amazing.
Two loves.
So he's like, he goes to bed dreaming of Victoria Sponges?
Every night, oh. Yes. And he's adopted all the Britishisms for, you know, for cooking language that are not
goodness.
Actually American English.
Has he proved
it's really
that?
Really cute. Exactly. Did you prove that, Mom? Like, it's fish. You don't prove fish. Anyway, all right. Well, thank you, as ever, to our fabulous producer, Anne Hepperman, who is, by the way, a genius at choosing music for the show, I will say that, and for all the shows that she produces. Thank you to Andy Bowers, who's the executive producer of All Slate Podcasts. Our intern is Shiva Bayat. The Double X Gabfest is part of the Panoply Network, which is growing ever bigger and more impressive and richer. Check out the entire roster at itunes.com/panoply. The show page is slate.com/XX for recommendations and more info on the show. Facebook page is facebook.com/XXGabFest for discussions and recommendations. Email XXGabFest@slate.com and subscribe on iTunes or any place where you can subscribe to podcasts. For June and Noreen, I'm Hannah Rosen. We will talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Man, she touched me like a dude. Hold your bad hands, I cry. 'Tis a pity she was a whore. 'Tis my curse, I suppose.
Hey, this is Brian Koppelman. I host the Slate podcast, The Moment. Each week, I talk to somebody who has excelled in a creative field, movies, art, books. I'm talking about people like Salman Rushdie.
The war is against pleasure.
Amy Schumer.
I was already headlining and I still didn't feel like a comedian.
And I asked them how and why they do what they do. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts or at itunes.com/themoment.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.